Welcome to this very special 400th episode of Reality TV Warriors. My name is Michael Armstrong, and joining me as always is the Canadian who once asked me whether 400 was, and I quote, that movie with all the Spartans, Logan Saunders.
Good afternoon.
The lady who claimed that 1 week in lockdown with her children is like spending 400 weeks of normal time with them, Michelle Pierce-Denovan.
Good morning.
And my fellow Brit who longs for the day that he'll last 400 seconds at a gong show, Anthony Williams.
Yeah, that would be all right.
It would, because you'd actually exceed the time limit for once.
I would. Yeah, it's 5 minutes. Whatever that is, like 300 seconds, yeah.
Have you actually managed to exceed the time limit on any shows yet?
I've done loads, just not the ones you've seen, mate. So there's a guy who runs gong shows near where I live, and I've made the final every time. I've not won one yet, but I've made the final every time. And he offers me paid work now, so that's fine.
You never invite me to the ones that you do well at. It's always the ones where I can just heckle you from the audience.
Well, yeah, exactly.
And this is, I would say, probably the most unprepared we have ever been for an episode. Even the ones that we do properly last minute. We don't really know what we're going to talk about. We're just going to have a nice chat. It'll be, in essence, our year in review, even though there's more podcasts to come this year. We're just going to have a nice chat.
I should note, this is the very first time all four of us have been on a podcast together.
It is officially, because technically we were all on episode 300, but that was recorded in two parts because we didn't have the time.
Yes.
So this is actually the first episode we've all recorded as a foursome.
It only took 8 years.
Yeah, it's only rapidly approaching 8 years, and I did the math a couple of days ago. There is a non-zero chance that we'll be finishing next year with episode 500.
Wow.
Did we stop at 500? This is like 500 and that's it?
Yep. Show's cancelled after 500. It's like, we'll finish season 10 of Belgi, we'll get to, say, 15 seasons of Mole recaps, and that is it.
Yep. Then one of us will go off on a transphobic rant and we'll just all get cancelled. That'll be it.
Oh, that's already been cut. I have alluded to it in the past. Someone loves a swear word and never says them. Just saying.
Yeah, as long as we avoid inviting Michael Richards onto this podcast, we should be okay.
Who?
You don't know Michael Richards?
I do not.
Kramer off of Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Do you know the big controversy with that is that this would have been 2006 or 2007. He had a stand-up act, and he was being heckled by the audience, and the audience members who were heckling him happened to be black, and then he ended up using the N-word a lot, and then everyone booed him, and then that effectively ended his career. He got to appear on the Seinfeld reunion episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm, and that's been it. And then he said, I'm pretty much going to retire, yeah. Like, he has an infamous appearance where he tries to apologize on Letterman the following day because Seinfeld happened to be a guest on Letterman, but then the audience thought it was a joke, so they just started laughing when Michael Richards was essentially breaking down, crying on live TV on Letterman. So, yeah, there's the history lesson for you.
Well, from my point of view, I can pretty much guarantee I'm not going to go on a transphobic rant on the podcast, and everyone else will probably say the same thing.
At 8 a.m. in the morning, I think you're safe. 8 a.m. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, I think it's a safe bet.
I don't know, Michelle. You make us promise not to record the stuff you say before the podcast. There is some pretty spicy language that comes out before the podcast from Michelle, at least. As I said in one of my favourite additional notes of the year on the second episode of Amazing Race 3, if enough people share the episodes, we will reveal the list of Michelle's favourite swear words.
Right.
I think George Carlin did the same thing.
Yes, you're right.
So, first things first, seeing as though this year has been so weird for all of us with the recordings and stuff, and I mean, I think it's only about 3 or 4 weeks since we finished recording Amazing Race 3, and most of that hasn't come out yet. There's still, I think, 17 episodes left after this one comes out. What have we actually been up to?
Since when? Hang on. Since when? I've been in lockdown forever.
Yeah, since when?
Yeah, Michelle's out of lockdown finally, which may or may not have come up in some of the Amazing Race ones.
Oh, my God. Yeah, and I've gone back to work teaching kindergarten wearing a mask for 6 hours a day. It is not fun.
Do you get let the kids watch Jim Carrey in the mask to ease everyone into it at the beginning? It's like, see, look, masks can be hilarious and fun.
Yeah, right. Jesus.
And if they start being really naughty, they have to watch Son of the Mask with Jamie Kennedy.
Yeah. You have a detention with Jamie Kennedy.
But on the plus side, they don't get to hear what you're silently calling them. So that's good.
We can't read the teacher's lips anymore. What is she mouthing under her breath?
Get me out of here.
I didn't know she knew so many languages.
Hut for Dama.
And you're gearing up to go away, aren't you, Logan?
Yeah, by the time this comes out, I will be away, because on November 2nd, I am off to Romania, and I've got tickets booked to two other countries.
Ooh.
Two other countries that you were being very coy with me about, and then showed me an email which confirmed what they are.
Yep. Well, so I may as well tell that story right now, because that's an entertaining one. So I was reaching out to Airbnb hosts. And one of them was, because I messaged a bunch of them saying, I'm an online ESL teacher. I need, can you please send me like your download and upload speed and your ping as well? And then if it's good enough, then I'll probably book with you. And sometimes people just say, oh, the speed is good enough, but I fall into that trap before. So I'm only going to book with somebody who sends me exact numbers. And most of the people sent back numbers, and then one guy was like, oh, it's nighttime, I'll message you in the morning when I wake up. And eventually he sends me the numbers, and that was all in the message. And it said, oh, his Airbnb is now unavailable. Because I guess if two or more people try to book for the same dates, then it lists the person's Airbnb as unavailable in the little sidebar on the Airbnb app. And I'm responding to the other people who were... Who responded earlier and who I was chatting with a bit more extensively or had a question within their inbox that I had to respond to. But this guy didn't send a question until an hour after I went to bed. So then I wake up and then I respond to him and say, oh, sorry, I thought it was unavailable. I booked with somebody else. And then I just get this huge rant that he was waiting for my response or other people waiting to book. This is the worst he's been treated in 3 years on Airbnb. And I said, I'm sorry, I just thought it was unavailable and I didn't see your question till afterwards. And he's like, what? No, you sent me this 20 hours without any sort of response to anything. And it just went on. I just kept every five messages or so. I just said, oh, I'm sorry. And then he just kept going on and on. And then eventually I'm like, okay, this is it. This is what happened. You didn't ask me a question till after I went to sleep. I work nights. I'm sorry for this misunderstanding. And that's it. And then he was still trying to respond after that. I'm thinking, the crazy part is this guy has a 4.84 rating out of 5 on Airbnb and has like 180 reviews and is a super host. And I'm thinking this guy really likes people who book with him. So, yeah, then I report him to Airbnb saying, this was excessive. I really don't want this guy messaging me again.
Jeez.
And going back to what I was saying about how it's been so long since we've recorded some of these episodes, I can't remember whether I've told the start of this story in one of the Vidamore Amazing Race episodes that haven't come out yet. I think I have, and Logan probably knows where I'm going to go with this one.
I think so.
What was it about?
So it's to do with Antwerp and the Belgian Mole Finale that never was, because for some context, to anyone who doesn't know, Logan and I go to the Belgian Mole Finale. We got invited by Gilles, the host. So what usually happens is we work out the date. I then book a flight and a hotel for me, and after we finish actually being at the Belgian Mole Finale event, Logan comes back to my hotel room, we record the finale podcast, and then he gets sent on his merry way about 3 a.m. So obviously that didn't happen last year, but I did still book a flight and a hotel, because at that point, when we worked out the date, we didn't know the coronavirus was going to be a thing. So contacted the airline, got the money back straight away, and had a hotel booking that I'd booked through booking.com. So, 24th of March last year, which is the first full day of lockdown and also my birthday, I emailed the hotel through booking.com and said, really sorry, your borders are locked down, our borders are locked down, nothing I can do. Is there any chance I can get a refund? As soon as I can, I will come over and stay with you. Took about 6 weeks, got a reply off them. They said no, we're still open for emergency bookings, so you're shit out of luck, basically. We can't offer you a refund, but we can offer you a credit note. Credit note was valid till the end of 2020. Got to about October, November time last year, our borders were still very much locked down, not a chance I was going to travel. Contacted him again, got the same response essentially, but we'll extend it to the end of 2021, fine, whatever. Got to August this year, the restrictions were still a little bit too fluid for me, so contacted him saying, doesn't look like I'm going to be able to come over this year, is there any chance I can just get a refund, I'm going to stay with you next year, as soon as I can, come over. Got a response off them saying no. And me being me, I obviously took this fairly nicely, not. And I think that's probably where it ended with the podcast, if I did tell this story on there, in August. There is a footnote coming to this. So basically, I contacted a credit card company, got told, sorry, you are probably in the right, but you can't prove that they were closed when you were meant to be going, so there's nothing we can do, sadly. Contacted booking.com, they said essentially the same thing, you contract with the hotel, which is nonsense, it's not. So ended up leaving them a 1-star Google review. Took about 6 weeks, got a response off them, and they said, oh, really sorry about this. We actually did offer you an extension for your credit note until the end of 2022, but you didn't accept it. So I contacted booking.com, and it turns out the booking.com customer service lied to me, and it was them who were being the shitheads and not the hotel. So I'm really hoping I didn't name the hotel, because they were lovely and booking.com are in my very bad books right now. As a result of this shitstorm, I've got an upgrade for the hotel next year, yeah, you go me, and booking.com are getting a 1-star Trustpilot review as soon as I stay in that hotel next year.
Yeah, we've had issues with booking.com too for GNs when she books her when she booked her quarantine hotel the first time. She tried to go through them because with the Philippines, what they do is it's pre-approved government hotels for them to spend their quarantine. So she booked a hotel that was on the list, paid in full before she left here. This was for Christmas time last year. And then she showed up at the airport saying, no, this is the hotel I booked at. They're on the government list. And then the airport said, no, they're not. You're going to have to stay at our government facility instead. So then I think she went through booking.com to try and get the money back. And then the hotel responded to her saying, oh, no, you booked the reservation. You're not getting the money back. But it's like, but she's not even checking in. She's not even staying there. And she booked it for 2 weeks. So they just kept 2 weeks worth of for that whole reservation and never refunded her. And that's because we booked it through booking.com. And then we had some other issue through booking.com too for the summertime one. Oh yeah, when she went back in summer, there was some sort of charge on it that wasn't listed in the booking.com price. And then, so then Jan had a fight with the hotel over that. Eventually they backed off because this hotel was actually reputable. But yeah, we're never booking with booking.com again because of those two instances.
Wow.
Unless, of course, they decide to sponsor the podcast, in which case we love you, booking.com.
I've noticed Expedia is a lot easier to deal with overall. If you have to choose between Expedia or booking.com, choose Expedia.
I have said it before, and I will say it again. We have absolutely no shame or qualms about shilling for anyone if they give us money. I know we've spent the last 5 minutes talking about how terrible booking.com's customer service is, but if they want to give us money, we will happily trumpet how great it is.
Hey, look, we've mentioned their brand name a lot of times. That's got to be worth something, right?
Exactly. It's just what they want for their SEO to be associated with a very imminent 1-star Trustpilot review. So yeah, that's my travel story, but weirdly, that whole stuff kicked off in August about when I had two really bad other pieces of customer service. So it just all came at the same time. I think I was just a bit on one about it.
Well, I don't have any holidays that I have to get money back from because we couldn't book anything because we weren't even allowed to go out of the state.
The state? Not even the country, the state.
The state, yes. A lot of the time we couldn't get even out of the state.
With a bit of luck, next month your borders will open though.
Hopefully. Queensland keeps themselves shut from everybody, which is where everybody wants to go. And WA, which is Western Australia, they're just like, he's like some draconian lord who just says, right, you're all out. We're not letting any infected in at all. So, yeah, it's really hard.
Yeah, we were saying yesterday before our aborted attempt at recording this podcast that it's really weird to think that your holiday to England where you met up with me and Anne was only about 6 weeks before the start of the pandemic.
Yep.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's amazing. But it feels like a lifetime ago, and there was just no hints that anything like this was going to happen at all, was there? It was nothing.
Mm.
Incredible.
No, I was away until like 6 days before our lockdown began, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Crazy.
I still have flight credits to Japan and Myanmar that I have to use up. Luckily, the airline to Myanmar wasn't a Myanmar-based airline. It was Thai Airways or something, so I know I'll be able to use that eventually. But in terms of getting to Myanmar itself, the pandemic is the least of its problems right now.
Is this your backhanded way of telling me that you're going to be away for some of the Mole podcasts next year? Because I need to know these things.
I guess during Vidim, that's a very strong possibility.
Yeah, assuming that Vidim doesn't extend its run next year, I'm going to be away between Mole seasons unless Belgi screws me and comes back any earlier than it did this year. But Belgi, as far as I'm aware, still has not filmed yet. No one has seen any inkling that Papa Bear Gilles de Costa has been out of the country yet, and it's very late for them, so that's interesting.
Do you think something happened? What's your speculation on it?
I don't know, because they have filmed this late before. Argentina was filmed up until pretty much Christmas, if you remember, but I don't think they like filming this late in the year.
Maybe they're filming in the Southern Hemisphere then? I know that didn't affect their South Africa schedule, but it could be a... I'd imagine it's probably a Southern Hemisphere location if we're heading into November.
I'm still anticipating a Europe location this season, and that they filmed it really early and nobody spotted. But I'm willing to be pleasantly surprised by them going a little bit further afield into slightly more exotic locations.
You mean Germany's not exotic enough?
Germany was surprisingly exotic. For a location, it was very interesting because nobody has ever done Mole there. It is one of those countries, and we've talked a lot about these on the Mole podcast this year and last year, they're going through a bit of a run at the moment of countries where you go, nobody's filmed there? I'm really surprised, but they're ticking off as a result of the pandemic, and it's one small positive of the pandemic happening. They're having to get a little bit more creative and think about where they're filming and going to countries where Mole has never filmed before, for better or for worse. The rumour for Vidim, and spoilers for anyone who doesn't want to know this, even though it'll get revealed in about 2 weeks, is apparently Albania.
That would be pretty cool.
We'll find out whether that's true in about 2.5 weeks as of the time of recording, because I think the Mole Bookie comes out on the 16th of November. But apparently the rumour is a split season between Albania and Italy.
Oh, Italy again?
Ooh.
Sorry, what's happening with Albania and the pandemic?
Albania's had like the most open borders of any country in the world since the start of the pandemic. I think they were pretty much the first European country to open up, and I think they still don't test anybody and they don't quarantine anybody. They've been doing that pretty much since day one.
Vidim 22 is going to be interesting because we saw the clip of the bit before the first execution. We know who's on it. We know there's 11 people, and we've seen clips of the first two challenges. And the scenery in those clips looked very similar to Tuscany, where they filmed Renaissance. But they were actually in a mystery theatre somewhere, and the working theory is that it's probably going to be a bit of Italy and a bit of Albania. But yeah, like I said, the Mole Bookie comes out on the 16th of November, I think it is, whatever that Tuesday is, and that should then confirm the location or locations that they end up going to. But it'd be very interesting if it is another two-country season, given we've not had one of those in years. The last one was Hong Kong and Philippines in 2014.
Ooh.
So we did have some questions sent in for the 400th episode. Thank you to anyone who did send any in. But one that wasn't sent in but has come up this week is this one from me. And it is, who do you think the best host of any reality TV show is?
Oh, God.
Not just one that we cover necessarily.
Ooh.
And this came up because there was a massive argument online this week when we're recording that Jeff Probst keeps being a shit to people on Survivor and how people are still inexplicably claiming that he's the best host or showrunner of any show worldwide, and the answer is no, he isn't.
I'm thinking.
I mean, mine is obviously Gilles DeCosta.
Well, yeah, of course.
I know I'm 1,000,000% biased on this, but I will say that I have told him this in the past, and even before he became a friend of the podcast, he was already my favourite.
If it's somebody who hasn't been on this podcast, I would go, one of my favourites, I would say, who I think is extremely underrated, was Matt Chisholm, who hosted the 2 seasons of New Zealand Survivor. He's just so quirky and such a fun host, but then he did a really good job with both reunion shows that they did for New Zealand Survivor. And yeah, I just think he's a great host overall. I would love to see him host another season.
I believe part of the reason that Survivor New Zealand didn't come back for a third season is because he moved to the countryside and essentially gave up working in TV.
Hmm, I heard that.
I may be wrong on that, but I think he went a little bit rural.
Yeah, if you see his Instagram, he definitely has some... he has some interesting content.
I think he had a farm.
What? There aren't any farms in New Zealand. You crazy?
What do you guys think, Michelle and Ant?
Well, I would say because I've met him, Glenn Hugel was a great host.
He is a lovely, lovely bloke.
Lovely man. I did quite enjoy Anderson Cooper as a host, actually. He was all right. Quite like that.
Yeah, he's really good as a host. Also somebody who only did 2 seasons. I think he was probably number one until Gilles DeCosta came on the scene.
Mm.
On the subject of lovely people who are also great mole hosts, and also he did Amazing Race Australia, I have to give props to Grant Bowler as well, because he is a lovely man from my interactions with him on Twitter.
I was going to say Grant, but more for the mole than for Amazing Race. I liked him in the mole. Definitely, you know, Phil could definitely be more out there. He's a bit quiet for me. So it's really hard. I have problems with lots of hosts for different reasons. But definitely Grant Bowler in the mole is better than him in the race, yeah.
Well, he's that more of a mysterious quality to him, which really works for the mole. It's why Anderson Cooper did so well, because he had that mysterious quality. And then you transition from Anderson Cooper to Ahmad Rashad for Celebrity Moles, and it's like, it just doesn't feel the same when you have a random sportscaster thrown into the mix.
I think as nice a person as Phil is, he has been phoning it in on Amazing Race for a few years now.
Did you see that clip that went a bit viral when he was on Tough as Nails a couple weeks ago?
No, I mute anything to do with Tough as Nails because it's just saccharine bullshit.
Yeah, it was a 7-second clip where Phil just says, "Oh, come on in," and everyone comes in, and there's a guy standing next to Phil who is, I guess, going to explain the challenge or whatever manual labor tasks they have to do. And he's like, "Oh, your name is Jeff, isn't it?" And Phil says, "No, Jeff's the guy who does Survivor." So I think that just kind of boils down what Phil would be like if he tries to be a more active host, is that he's essentially imitating Jeff Probst.
Yeah, you get the odd glimpse of Phil enjoying himself on Amazing Race, but I think in the past few seasons that's been a bit more few and far between.
I mean, it is 33 seasons that he's done now. I think it's just more of that thing that he gets to do once every other year or so, maybe once every 18 months, just as a fun, like, oh, it's fun to do an Amazing Race again. You know, fans really, I like to do it for the fans and the paycheck. And then he just has to do it for, 3 weeks of filming and then 1 week or 2 weeks of other, you know, press or the finals interviews and whatnot. So maybe takes up like 6 weeks out of his whole year doing stuff for Amazing Race. And you got to think it's now been over 20 years of doing Amazing Race. And Jeff Probst has now done over 20 years of Survivor. And the way Probst keeps it interesting for himself is to introduce hourglasses and 20 different advantages with Amazing Race, he can't really, Phil just can't implement whatever random twist he wants just to make it more exciting for himself. I think the furthest he's gotten with it is doing the head-to-head twist for two seasons, and it fell flat instantly.
I mean, I love the fact that so many hardcore Survivor fans have watched Survivor 41 and got to the position where I'm at, where they're just like, why am I still watching this? It's bullshit. The delicious turn in the fan community after episode one of people just going, Survivor has a few too many bonkers advantages in the game now. It's not enjoyable. It's just delightful for me.
I like how the hardcore fans who have had an easy time for the past 40 seasons, how even they can't remember who has what at this point, which is truly impressive, because you got to think these are people who have watched, you know, 700 episodes at this point, probably closer to 800 or 900 if you include international versions. And even they are like, wow, I've been watching like 800 episodes of Survivor, but even I am lost.
Well, I said this to you guys on our Facebook chat a couple of weeks ago. Survivor Wiki now actually has to have an extra column on its elimination table to say who has what advantage.
Crazy. Oh, that explanation. The last episode, he gave an explanation. I can't remember when. And I'm like, okay, I think my brain just exploded. It was like, there's too much, too much. And then on the Facebook chat, people are going, okay, what did he just say? Or I've just switched off. It was just too much. It was ridiculous.
Well, just think of that. Ooh, spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen the last pre-merge tribal council. But when it was the UWA with just the three of them going to tribal council, if that idol wasn't activated, it was just going to be two people voting. Shan wouldn't have even been allowed to vote. It just would have been Ricard and Jeannie. And then it's like, well, okay, either one of them votes for Shan and Shan automatically goes home, or they vote for each other and it's this bizarre 1-1-0 vote. And in which case, I mean, in a revote, whoever's not involved in the tie would vote, but Shan's not allowed to vote. So do the two people then who are involved in the tie get a go back to the standard rock draw rule where those two are immune, and then Shan's the only one who can draw a rock and goes home by default anyway? Do all three of them make fire? But no, wait a second. Shan's going to give her extra vote to Ricard in case her idol doesn't activate, so Jeannie somehow goes home by a 2-1 vote anyway, even though Shan can't vote.
So weird.
Yeah, so that's where we're at with Survivor right now. I like that there's no swaps or Edge of Extinction, or Redemption Island. Like, we're so close to it being the best Survivor we've had in years, but then we've got an hourglass and 10 different advantages dropped down. It's like, even if it was five advantages and no hourglass, we'd all be fine. But this, I mean, thankfully you've got good casting, but people are gonna be lost. I think multiple Survivor writers now have written that that Survivor has essentially become Mario Party. And as a big Mario Party fan, I think that's a very accurate comparison.
You know what I was thinking, because I'm a mother? I'm thinking, why are you going to smash glass on a beach? What the hell is wrong with you people?
It's going
to
be a fire.
Why can't you just give her answer? You don't need to smash glass on a sand beach.
The best thing is, this episode's going to come out after the next Survivor episode airs anyway, but the press pictures have already revealed what she decides to do, whether she decides to smash the hourglass or not. It's already been spoiled, basically.
Ridiculous.
I don't think I really need to know the spoiler to know what happens.
Yeah, you can essentially think about it as, is she going to give herself immunity, or is she going to leave herself vulnerable?
Or is she going to give herself a 1-in-5 shot of going home, and she knows she doesn't have any advantages or idols, which probably reduces her chances of going home to 1-in-3 if she doesn't smash that hourglass. And she knows she's on the bottom on top of that. So essentially, Erica, do you want to go home in 12th place, or do you want to smash this hourglass and advance to the next round and see 20 different advantages and idols get played?
I think the ultimate question here is, if they rang you tomorrow, Logan, and said, we want you for Survivor 43, Are you interested? Would you say yes?
I think I still would. I mean, I'm not watching it. I'm experiencing it. So that's different. And it's like, hey, maybe I would really suck at Survivor and I need 3 or 4 advantages and 2 idols to even get myself to the end. I don't know if I'm going to be any good or not. I could really suck. And it's like, hey, I won this game because I found an beware advantage in the fire pit. I found another advantage in my shoe. I combed my hair and another idol fell out of that. Like, that's what, so maybe it's a good thing I waited until Survivor 43 as opposed to, I don't know, being cast for Thailand or Amazon or something like that.
I mean, ignoring the fact that you would have been far too young for those seasons.
Yeah, but, well, you get the point, though.
If you had been cast on those seasons, there would have been a child endangerment case.
Imagine if I was on Chewy Gone during the Attack Zone Challenge. Logan just flew 20 feet after being attacked by Ken, the New York cop.
Rob just suspended Logan by his neck.
Yeah. They were not in the Attack Zone when I first made contact. And Logan's going home on a stretcher.
So that actually leads us on nicely to another question that we did have in, which is, other than the shows that we cover, what shows would we apply for?
None. I only want to apply for one. So none.
And my answer is also none, because it's mole or bust for me.
Mm.
And if it did come back in the UK, or if Netflix's reboot that we're not supposed to know is a reboot of US Mole yet, actually did a circle and opened up applications to UK people as well, I would be applying for it.
I would. I've been applying for Big Brother Canada every year.
Even something like Race Across the World, which is life-affirming in some cases, I don't think I would do very well on, because I don't exactly like slumming it when I'm away. I can't imagine finding much pleasure in sleeping on a park bench, for example.
Yeah, not for anybody. Not for anybody.
Yeah. I think I'd apply for that, or if there was a UK version of the race, or the Mole. I think that's it.
Yeah, because we always say we would never apply for Hunted because I would be miserable sleeping in a field. I don't camp.
I would apply for Hunted if Amazing Race didn't exist.
I'm very surprised you didn't apply for Australian Hunted.
Because then you're wiped out if I want to do the race. It's a small country. They don't put people on multiple times unless it's a celebrity version an all-stars Sam? Or something like that. Yeah, I think because of the way she looks.
Or Sarah off of James appearing on Married at First Sight, formerly of Australia 2.
Oh, but Married at First Sight, yeah, that's a different kettle of fish though, isn't it?
It is an irritatingly compelling kettle of fish. From personal experience. Because me having the moral high ground about these sort of shows has gone now. After one of the Australian seasons appeared on UK television at the start of the year and I resisted and it didn't last long because it's amazing and absolutely disgusting television.
Yep.
I've never seen that show.
For your own sake, don't, but it is delicious trash television. The season that was on at the start of the year, they cast one good couple and 11 sets of terrible, terrible people who really hate each other. And doing things like throwing wine glasses at each other. And there is one bride in that season who I think slept with 3 of the husbands, only one of whom she was actually married to.
Oh my god.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. And, like, she had a cheating scandal. We're not going to get into this properly. This will be the only time I mention Married at First Sight on the podcast. But she ended up having a cheating scandal. She hooked up with one of the husbands and convinced the experts to let her come back into the process with this other husband, but not actually, quote-unquote, married. And they said yes to each other at the end. And in the reunion, at the end of the season, it's tradition that they bring everyone back and then reveal stuff that nobody knew about, like the fact that she was propositioning one of the other husbands. And they have this after show that is on live after the episodes air and on their like streaming platform. And there is a delicious 10-minute interview with this couple breaking up live on air. And it is so awkward and made the entire season worthwhile in the end. It was delicious. It is everything. Everything. and it made the entire season so worthwhile to sit through their nonsense.
Well, Jesus.
I can't imagine what it'd be like to live that.
Oh no, it's absolute delicious trash television. And then the UK one came back with the Australian format earlier in the year, and they went out of their way to find nice people, and it still sort of works, even without the shitheads on it. And there is one more question we've had in, but it is a complete setup of a question, and that is, which show would we like people to bring back?
The Mole Australia.
Yeah, it's a complete tee-up of a question. They need to bring back UK Mole. Netflix's Insider, or whatever we're calling it, needs to be good enough to get a second season. They need to open up applications to international people, and I need to get on it. That's how it needs to be. Other than Mole, what would be your answer?
To bring back.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a lot. You're probably referring to a show that I probably watched that only lasted one season in the early 2000s, so we're really going to the memory banks here.
I wouldn't mind, actually, for America to do another Kid Nation. I thought that was really interesting.
I think that probably would cause a little bit too much shit, given what happened in the original Kid Nation.
It's worth its weight in gold.
Yeah. Still.
I don't know what I would pick, because I don't think there's another reality show I'd bring back that isn't Mole. Game show, yes. Reality show, no.
Such as?
Civilian version of Weakest Link would be my first choice, because I really want to have a crack at Weakest Link now that I'm old enough.
Hmm.
I'd like them also to do Jeopardy properly over here, because we've not had that since the 90s.
Would you do Tipping Point? They've got that on TV here every day. Your English Tipping Point is on.
I applied for Tipping Point a couple of years ago and got a call back from them almost immediately and then heard nothing since.
Oh.
Yeah, I didn't even get a call back when I applied.
In terms of stuff that I do apply for every year, I apply for Millionaire every single year, never get a call back. Ant would be one of my phone friends and he knows that.
Jeez, problems.
Ant's known for ages he would be one of my phone friends, and he knows that if he helped me win a lot of money, I would treat him very nicely. I would potentially treat him to the mythical podcasting shed that he's always going on about when he's on TV shows.
not these days.
I apply for Beat the Chasers every year and hear nothing back, which I really want to do because I think I could win it. It's much more my sort of game than original Chasers. So yeah, I would love it if they brought back Jeopardy or Weakest Link so that I could have a crack at them. I always apply for Beat the Chasers and Millionaire, but in terms of reality shows, that's it, basically. I don't really want to apply for any others, and I don't really want to bring any back. It's Mole or Bust for me.
Mole USA, that is.
No, Mole UK. Mole UK was way better than US.
Yeah, UK was way better.
Going back to Ant's point earlier about Glenn Hughesgill being a lovely, lovely man, I got to meet him in August because he was exec producing a run-through of a quiz show that starts a couple of days after this episode comes out, called Sitting on a Fortune. And he was hosting the first of the two run-throughs that we did that day, and I was more starstruck to meet him than I was Gary Lineker. But we had a lovely chat about the Mole. He is still as big a fan as he was then, and he had so much fun on Mole UK, and you could tell.
It's probably his favourite gig.
Oh, definitely, and I say this a lot when we talk about the desire to be the Mole and how I can never understand why people would not want to be the Mole if they applied, because you get to be the centre of attention. And the show becomes all about you. That's not me being big-headed, but I think it would be way more fun to be Mole than contestant, because you get to mess with people, you're guaranteed to be in the end, and, you know, the show becomes all about you. That's not me being big-headed, but I think it would be way more fun to be Mole than contestant, because you get to mess with people, you're guaranteed to be in the end, and, you know, the show becomes all about you. And obviously some hosts know more than others. Jill knows everything because he is showrunner, but Glenn deliberately knew nothing unless he absolutely had to. The only reason he knew who the Mole was in the end of the second UK series is because he had to do a clue himself, and that clue narrowed it down in the end enough for him to be able to know who the Mole was at the final reveal. Otherwise, he went into it blind. But Glenn just got to sit on the sidelines, chatting shit, taunting people, basically, and probably getting a decent amount of money to travel the world and have fun. I can't imagine a better hosting job.
You just want to mess with people, don't you? You'd like to be a host so you can do crap like that.
Well, Mole is a show entirely about messing with people. The best moles do it. The best moles take control and mess with people whether they realise it or not. And the best hosts do it. It's the same reason your own was a terrible mole, because he did nothing to actually further the cause of messing with people. But the best moles do take control and really mess around behind people's backs.
Like a certain Leonard?
Yeah, like Leonard this year, or both of the Mole Historian seasons we've done this year. Both of them had brilliant moles who did nothing but mess with people for 9 episodes.
And contestants who don't crack.
Yeah, we've got some fun jokes coming about that at the end of the year. And one final thing on my notes, just to save me time when Hunted does come back next year, is we do have a couple of Hunted corrections from our friends Doug and Dr. Steve Hersey, Assistant to the Chief. Both of them were very gracious in listening to our Hunted Series 1 episodes, which you can still catch up on. They are still very much available. And I picked out my favourite of their corrections that they did send me. So Steve did send me the Wanted poster from the original pilot of Series 1, which I think I did send you guys, because I did manage to track down the Wanted posters at the time, but there was a pilot that was about 6 months earlier, before the show actually was commissioned. But Steve sent them over to me with the caption, "You missed these ones." And my favourite quote from Doug was genuinely a bit put out that you don't believe we do real hacking in HQ. If you don't believe us, who does?
God bless it.
We do believe you, Doug. It's just that Michelle and Ant put me up to saying that.
Oh, yeah, right.
They corrupted me. That's all it is.
Yeah. Jeez.
No, we just know that they do such amazing stuff that we just can't believe it's for real. That's how good they are.
Yeah, exactly. So the final question from me, and some of this can get cut if we start having a bit of a debate on it, is what are we going to do next year? Because this is our last recorded episode of the year. Obviously, there's still 17 more episodes to come out. But this is the best opportunity for us to get together and actually decide what we're going to do next year. Obviously, Vidim comes back January 1st, which means that our recaps will start on January 5th. Belgium, we're expecting, is going to be roughly around the same time, my birthday week. So that will probably start getting released from about the 24th of March, best day of the year. Hunted will be sometime in the probably first half of next year, depending on when they can actually air it, because it was very delayed with filming this year because of the Rona. Other than that, I don't know what we're going to do just yet.
We could do another race.
I think we probably will end up doing another amazing race.
Mm-hmm.
Logan and I have already started having a little chat on which one he would like to do if he gets a choice.
Yeah. And the listeners can also suggest a season as well. But right now, I would say we'd probably be doing season 4 or season 5.
Yeah, Logan did originally say season 4 to me, but I am open to having a change of heart on that and having my mind changed a little bit.
Yeah, most likely 4.
Yeah, I don't know whether season 4 has the same comic potential that season 5 has for us, at least.
Yeah, it's just that the bar would be set too high to do season 5, potentially.
Vidim is the one where I think there could be a little bit of debate, because there's potentially 3 we might do next year. This is not an announcement, but I've been toying with 3 potentials.
Yeah, it might be the same as this year. We do another couple Vidim historians, I'm sure.
Yeah, we'll be doing some Vidim historians. I just don't know how many yet. It might just end up being 2, depending on whether we can be bothered recording the third one or not. And the other one that I wanted to bring up is maybe Race Across the World?
Yes, that's actually probably... It'd probably be the quickest ones to record, most likely.
Yeah.
Because it's only a few episodes, and I don't know how much... We would be doing individual episode podcasts, but I just don't know... It probably wouldn't be as long as like a mole season each week as it's happening. How deep those discussions get with Race Across the World. It's more documentary style, so it'd be easier. It'd be an easier project.
Yeah, yeah. There's not so much strategy, is there?
Yeah, exactly.
I think we would be doing the show a disservice as a team if we didn't spend an entire episode talking about the boat saga that is in Series 1. It is one of my favourite episodes of reality TV ever, because it is like some sort of nightmarish Lynchian horror film of people just going stir crazy.
Yeah.
And it is delightful television.
You should watch it tomorrow for Halloween.
I'd like to do just so it forces me to do a rewatch, because that would be great.
Yeah, I think if we do Race Across the World, it will be a project for all four of us.
Yeah.
Rather than it just being a segregated group of us.
Hmm.
But me being me, I have to work out where it'd fit on the schedule if we did do it.
But if they do one next year, would you do it live if they do a current one?
They're not going to do one next year, I don't think. Definitely not in the normal time slot, which is about February, because they would be filming by now if they were going to do it next year. But I've mentioned this in the past with regards to Amazing Race. Race Across the World's policy seems to be we're not filming anything until everywhere on the route is clear and everywhere on the route is safe from the pandemic. So I think it's going to be next year at the absolute earliest with that.
Okay.
It was six episodes for Series 1, right?
Yeah, six episodes for Series 1, eight for Series 2.
Yeah.
And to answer your other question, Michelle, no, we wouldn't probably cover it live because Race Across the World tends to air on a Sunday, and that's about the worst day of the week that anything can air to actually get us doing a podcast about it.
Okay. Hmm. Yeah, it is actually, isn't it?
Because it would be very difficult for you to be there.
And then it interferes with our Amazing Race 33 filming schedule.
I will say that that is not happening. You guys can do whatever you want with Amazing Race 33, but I will not be a part of that coverage.
I had to throw that in there.
I know you did. So yeah, there will be live mole seasons next year, both Dutch and Belgian. There'll be more mole historians. They'll be live hunted whenever they can be asked airing that. There will be probably another Amazing Race historians, maybe Race Across the World. Other than that, I'm not sure. I am well aware that we are doing our usual thing of overpromising and under-delivering here, but we will see. It's a heavy pencil at the moment for a lot of these things. If people can let us know what they actually want to hear, that would be great. Have you guys got anything else you want to say?
No.
I'm submitting my 10th Big Brother Canada application today. Number 10.
God.
Good luck.
Are you doing it in Halloween garb?
No. It's not going to be a Halloween application. I don't think production really is too fond of costumes in application videos.
Hmm.
But yeah, 10. I've been doing that. I've been applying to get on there for 10 freaking years.
Who's applied the most times for The Amazing Race and then finally got on? Or for Survivor and then finally got on?
I'm trying to think of them with Amazing Race.
Or even Survivor.
We had this conversation before.
Yeah.
We have, and I'm trying to remember who we actually settled on.
Yeah, I thought it was 8 or 9 for Survivor. I don't remember who it was.
For Survivor, I think it's way higher. I think there's people who applied, like, didn't Brendan from Ghost Island apply every single time until he got on? And Chrissy, who was on the season before, she also applied, I think, from season 2 onwards, and then only didn't apply once or twice because she was pregnant, I think.
Oh, yeah, really? Something ridiculous about
really
that.
A lot.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure Brendan racked up, like, probably close to 20 applications or so. And then I'm in this one Facebook group of like veteran applicants for Survivor, and some of them said, oh, I sent in my 25th or I guess because what is it, one application per 2 seasons now for about the past, has it been like that since Nicaragua that they've done simultaneous casting where you just do one application per cycle?
Yeah, because it's all money saving. It's the same reason they only do one location now, and that is that it's all money saving.
So
can I just highlight you're in a Facebook group for people who have applied for Survivor many, many times.
Yeah. Yeah, I can bring it. Let me look it up. Let me see. I'll see the exact number.
There's a Facebook group for everything.
That's insane.
Hang on. Let me find it.
What's it called? Logan, just what is that group called?
I'm trying to find it right now. I haven't checked in on it for a while.
Oh, dear.
Hang on. I didn't do a specific enough search.
Because I can imagine the name of it being really long.
Oh, The Secret Obsession of the Survivor Applicant.
Oh, okay.
I have quite a few friends in this group.
I'm not going to lie, I was thinking of cutting this entire conversation, but Logan's revelation is making this stay in.
No one's actually saying how much they've done so far.
How many members are in that group?
A little over 70. It's funny, I don't know most of these people, so I don't know how I even got in here. Because I've been in this group for like 10 years. I'm thinking I couldn't even apply to Survivor until like 2 or 3 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, so, well, there's people in there who have said they've been applying for over 20 years, so I there's got to be a few people who have done it.
Yeah.
Over 30, probably. It'd be about 30 times, I guess. 31, 32?
The answer is far too many. People need to get a life.
Yeah.
I remember one post in that group about, this was probably about a period of my timeline, maybe about a year ago, maybe even longer than a year ago, where somebody said, well, this was actually sad. It's not really funny. When they said, oh, I got injured somehow, so I'm not physically able to do Survivor anymore. So after applying for 18 or 19 years, I will no longer be able to even have a shot at getting on. I'm thinking, that must suck to apply about 30 times and be like, well, I'm no longer physically capable of doing it. And just hang up the applicant gloves.
Way to bring the energy of the podcast down, Logan.
Yeah. I'm surprised that Grip hasn't come up after 400 podcasts. It took 400 for me to mention that.
I don't know if we can top that. Have you guys got anything else you want to say?
Can we go for a couple more minutes just so we move on from that depressing, obsessive applicant note? Like just one more topic, extend for another 5-10 minutes?
I think if there's anything that is going to sum us up after 400 podcasts, it is ending a podcast that is supposed to be a huge celebration with a deeply depressing story.
Jesus Christ. The good news is I think I could, it'd be funny if I apply another, if there's still another 20 years of Big Brother Canada and I get in 30 applications for Big Brother Canada, because that would take me to 50 years old.
God.
At what point do you just take the hint?
take the hint, take the L. But yeah, I get to be, if I do get cast, so I get to be one of those people who says, oh, I'm a big super fan. I've applied 12 times for this.
And then be first boot.
Yeah, and then be first boot, or in the case of Chris and McKenis, don't even make it into the damn house.
I will reiterate the promise that I have made in the past, which is that if Logan ever gets cast on a show, we will cover it on the podcast for the time that he is on that show. So it will be a one-week spectacular episode. It will be a one-episode special of Logan getting evicted or eliminated, all the tribe speaking about Logan.
Oh, that's joyous.
How many times, Michelle, have you applied for Amazing Race?
Let me see. There's been 5 seasons, 4 times.
You missed out on one. Okay.
Well, because I just had a baby. Well, I was pregnant when the apps came out, so I'm like, I don't think I can do it.
Yeah. Have you guys applied for anything repeatedly that you have yet to get on? I don't want to be the one that sticks it like a sore thumb here with Big Brother Canada 10 times, Amazing Race Canada 6 times, and Survivor 3 times.
Well, as I said before, it's only really quiz shows that I apply for multiple times. So I've done Millionaire every single time since he brought that back. I do Beat the Chasers every time because I think both of them would be reasonably easy money. Beat the Chasers is much more my style than Normal Chase. And I also want revenge on the chaser who beat me. Other than those two quiz shows, not really. I do apply for pretty much any quiz show going, though, because I am not fussy at all as long as it has a good jackpot.
Yeah, I don't apply for that many. Actually, my hit rate is pretty good, I think. I think I've applied for about 7 and gotten 4.
That's good.
How come I don't have that success rate? I've applied 20 times total and I've gotten on 0.
Because you're not as TV ready as me and Ant. That's all it is.
Wow.
I think it's a smaller application pool is my guess.
But that should make you more likely to get on if there's less people applying.
No, I mean, you guys have a smaller application pool.
I really don't think we do, because if you consider that the chase when I did it, post-audition, was 100,000 people in the contestant pool for 520 spots, I think it was. So that's people who've applied and then got through an additional stage before they get to that 100,000 pool.
Okay, that's a bigger application pool.
Yep.
You can say that about pretty much any show apart from The Chase. Me and Ant both got on in a contestant pool of over 100,000 people.
It's crazy.
Granted, there's more spots that get picked, though. 500 out of 100,000 as opposed to, say, you know, 10 or 14 or 16 people out of 10,000. Someone do the math on that on the odds.
I think, to be fair, though, casting is very different from a one-off quiz show to something like Amazing Race, isn't it? So,
yeah, you've kind of got to make sure that you're not casting complete arseholes if you're doing multiple episodes with the same people, which is why we've only ever done one and dones.
Yep. We'd get caught out far too quickly.
Oh, your guys' odds was actually four times better than mine.
Okay.
Yeah, but we're also four times better.
Jesus Christ. Okay, I don't feel so bad about that now.
Has anyone got anything else they want to say before we wrap up?
No, I just can't believe we're at 400. It's crazy.
Cheers to 400. Here's to 400 more.
I'm not promising anything. It all depends on how many episodes we do next year. I might be burnt out by that point. So, in that case, thank you very much for listening to this 400th episode of the podcast. We'll be back every Wednesday till the end of the year at 4 v Eastern Mall, Oregon, and every Sunday for Amazing Race 3. Don't forget you can contact us on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, or Instagram, where we are RTV Warriors, or you can email us on contact at rtvwarriors.com. Logan is on Twitter at LogsKwaki. Michelle is Bear 333333333333. Anthony is Bullsboy, and I am MJ Harmstone. Thank you very much for listening, but with that, your time in the 400th episode is over.
Peace out and just chill till the next episode.
Bye.
Bye.